You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Good morning, Pittsburgh diners and travelers. Good afternoon to our overseas listeners, and good morning to Peter.
Good morning. We should say worldwide listeners, shouldn't we?
We should.
And we should wish them all a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And well, it's not New Year's Day, but we already passed that. We're well on into our new year. And to celebrate that, we have on the line an absolutely astonishingly talented and accomplished chef, Andrew Carmelini. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about you and your background and your fabulous restaurant, which everybody should go visit in Manhattan, called Avoce?
Yeah, I started cooking when I was a little kid, and started working professionally in restaurants just when I was in high school. And I mean, I always cooked at home, and then kind of the restaurant thing was kind of very intriguing to me. And I was either, you know, you come to that choice when you're 17, what you're going to do, and I was either going to go to Berklee School of Music or I was going to go to Culinary Institute of America.
Now, where was home, Andrew?
I grew up in Ohio.
Where in Ohio?
Cleveland.
Oh, in Cleveland. Okay.
Yeah.
And so you were a talented musician as well?
Yeah, so I also, you know, play a couple of instruments, you know, guitar and keyboards and this type of thing, and you know, decided that I was going to go for the, you know, try the cooking thing out, and because I've been doing it probably at four years at that time, and you know, love to cook, but anyway, I went to school, and that kind of helped me understand what the broader picture was than just a small little restaurant. I came to New York a couple years later and worked at a lot of great restaurants, a lot of great chefs.
Oh, you've worked with the best.
You know, I was in Europe for a couple of years. I was a year in France and a year in Italy. And
now you were in Imola.
Yep, I was.
Yes.
In
Santa Monica.
I mean, all over. I spent the most time in Piemonte and Emilia Romagna.
Mm-hmm.
In France, I worked in Paris and in Nice also.
We were at San Domenico in Imola in either 1994 or 1995. Were you there then?
No, that was a couple years after I was there.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there 92. It's a nice town outside Bologna, and a great like culinary heritage in that whole area, Parma, Bologna. Modena,
oh yeah, it's fabulous.
Right. They say it's some of the richest food, some of the richest agriculture in the whole of Italy, I think, from what I've read. And it certainly was reflected that way in Imola and all the other places in Emilia-Romagna that we ate that were all extraordinary.
Now, do you go back frequently to Italy? I mean, your restaurant is Italian, right?
Yes, it is. Voce is Italian. And it's, even though, like, I've cooked all food from, I love food from all over the world, and I've been lucky enough to travel all over the world, and I love, I was always been interested more in like what the grandmothers were cooking than the big chefs. And, you know, this is my first restaurant on my own. I have some partners that are restaurateurs in London. And
who are they?
They have Marlon Abella. He's a restaurateur in London. He has a wonderful Japanese restaurant.
Oh, sure. I'm trying to get in touch with him right now.
Oh, okay.
What's his restaurant?
Marlon Abella.
Yeah, I'm trying to get him. I think I have a bad email for him. You don't happen to have one, do you?
Yeah, we can do all that afterwards. Obviously,
that'd be great.
Right.
So he's my partner, and he has a beautiful Japanese restaurant and a beautiful French restaurant in London, the Greenhouse and Umo, respectively.
Okay. Yeah, we're there. We go to what's the name of our restaurant? We go to for Valentine's lunch every year.
We go to Zaffirano.
Zaffirano.
Oh, okay. Nice.
We go there for lunch because we've been doing it for years.
Well, let's not talk about it. We need to talk to now. Carmelini's Italian anyway, Andrew, right?
From yeah, my family's you know, Italian. Actually, I'm half Polish and half Italian.
Uh huh. And from what part of Italy?
Friuli and Tuscany.
Oh yeah, we've been there too. Yeah. Yeah.
And
so you know Lydia and Joe and all those people.
Yeah, and although they're more from Istria, and my family's more from near Udine.
Udine, we've been there.
Oh sure, there's a wonderful restaurant near there called La Frasca.
Yep, absolutely.
Yes.
Walter, who owns it, is good buddies with
Walter. He raises his own pigs.
Yeah, makes his own sausage.
But he raises the pigs from which to make the sausage.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
But essentially, when you go to Friuli, you know, like most people's idea of Italian cooking, and you go to Friuli, and people don't, I mean, it's like, it has nothing to do with what most people's, you know, idea of Italian cooking is. There's a lot of, like, it's Austrian in a way, and Yugoslavian in a way. There's cabbage, there's caraway, there's, you know, there's different...
Sauerkraut.
Yeah, there's different... You pickled turnips sometimes you see up there. And
frico.
Even Emilia-Romagna, too, like, you know, it has... They eat frog legs in Emilia-Romagna, and quite a bit of them, and they have... out in the Basso, out by the Po, you'll find, you know, little restaurants that just serve fried frog legs.
And then in
Bosio, outside Piacenza, they have the snail festival every year.
What is the town we went to, the snail town?
Carrasco in Piemonte was where we had the most snails. That apparently was where they were first cultivated. They were discovered by the Romans and cultivated there for the first time.
Right.
And we had grandmother's recipe for snails, which had at least 1,000 snails in each bowl.
It's this time of year too. It's like around Christmas time. It's the time to eat snails.
But you know,
mushrooms.
Andrew, I thought I was going to write a book about snails, and I did all this research, and I don't think I've eaten a snail since I did all this research.
You had enough snails, huh?
I had enough, yes.
She knew more about snail physiology and sexology than she ever wanted to know.
There's a little video on the computer that shows the mating. It was too cute.
But let's do a little bit about Avoce cuisine.
Tell us about Avoce.
I mean, Avoce, it's a very modern kind of room. It gets very busy.
It gets rave reviews. What is it about Avoce that everybody's fallen in love with?
I mean, I think that, you know, the food is it's not over complicated. It's not overthought. A lot of the recipes are kind of inspired by tradition, not necessarily always traditional, but just are rooted in real Italian cooking, and we get, you know, some good products, and we don't really mess with them too much, and, you know, we're having a good time, and really, if I'm having a good time, then chances are that you'll have a good time also.
Yeah.
And we're not really, I wanted to have, you know, in lunchtime, it's kind of a power lunch scene, but at nighttime, it ends up being fun, and the room is kind of sexy and low-lit, and modern, and I think the combination of having rustic, very delicious flavor food, and then this kind of like modern, sexy space, it's a nice mix, I think.
How about giving our listeners the details, address, website?
We're vocerestaurant.com, currently under construction. I'm changing the website.
Oh.
And we're at 41 Madison, which is the corner of 26th Street, just off of Madison Square Park.
Now, you're also a sort of a representative of a book that we were going to talk about, How I Learned to Cook. Could you tell us, you're in this book, and so everybody else is too, I think. Could you tell us a little bit about the genesis of this book?
I mean, it's a compilation of a bunch of different chefs with different stories. I mean, you have, you know, famous chefs like, you know, Daniel Ballou and Pierre Hamé and... Michel
Farrah and Andrea
and some, you know, like Chris Bianco as Pizzeria Bianco and Phoenix, and you have you know, Tom Colicchio and a bunch of New York people also, you know, like Gabriel Hamilton and my friend Barbara Lynch up in Boston, and Sarah Molden has a recipe in there, and they're just kind of a collection of stories of the trials and tribulations of on the road to chefdom or being a restaurateur. And there's some pretty funny ones inside.
Which did you think were funny?
I mean, you know, because when I read it, I'm reading it with a different, you know, sense than, because I can say almost with every story in the book, I can say that, oh, yeah, I've been there or went through a similar similar story. I mean, my story takes place in Italy. How I got kind of talked into...
Yeah, that the olive oil thing.
I did this the world olive oil competition.
It was pretty funny.
And you finished up in 10th place, I think.
And it was the whole, you know, the global aspect of cooking competitions. And which is kind of like, you know, that experience is like one of those things, like along the road of experiences when you get to... you know, becoming a chef or becoming, you know, a restaurateur.
And this was probably all Spanish olive oil, right? Imported by the shipload, repacked in Lucca, Italy, so that it could be called Italian olive oil, and then shipped off to China, I think.
I mean, it was definitely an eye-opener, that trip. and frustrating at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's like it was hard picking one story. I mean, I could have probably filled a book with stories. So you know, in a couple of other stories, and you know, in the collection, I was with some of the other people that were there.
Oh, I see. Yeah, well, there's it's getting to be sort of an incestuous world, isn't it?
I thought Norman Van Aken was the wildest of all. I mean, he didn't even conclude with cooking a meal because they had finally got this cut of meat, and then they tripped something on the grill and it flew over the fence and a dog got it. But they talk about sleeping on the beach, then waking up, going to earn enough money so that they could buy more grass, and then using that, and then going back to sleep again. It's really hard to imagine why he would want to tell this particular story.
Yeah, I have. I can't speak for him.
And there are some more that are a little bit like that. But it is an intriguing book, and it's called
How I Learned to Cook.
And you can get it, of course, through the onthemenuradio.com website.
Do we have it up on our website?
Of course we do.
Okay, that's onthemenuradio.com.
And then go to the OTM bookshelf, and you can read details of it right there. And you had fun. It was a fun experience being part of the book.
Oh yeah, it was great. I mean, it's nice to be included. It's a pretty heavy roster of talent.
Oh yeah.
And the funny thing is that now that I just opened it up, and it's actually just to reread it again, and I mentioned Iron Chef in like the fourth sentence, and saying that I would never do it, but actually my Iron Chef comes out this spring.
Oh, did you do one?
Yeah, I kind of got talked into doing one. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be on the spring schedule.
Now, how did you do? Are you going to give away a little secret?
I mean, it's going to be great TV. That's all I'm going to say.
You're not going to say whether you won or not, huh?
It's going to be great TV.
We had Tom Douglas on just shortly after the his victory over Mario Batali aired on the TV. So he was he probably knew about it for months. I guess they do record them a long time in advance.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he didn't let on how long it had been in the pipeline. But he'd aired about 2 weeks before.
Well, you know, I mean, his secret ingredient was salmon. I mean,
yeah.
He
had a good start.
He had
a good start.
So where do you think all this is heading, this celebrity chef stuff?
I mean, you know, when I got into cooking, it was not really that, you know, it was not looked at as the kind of, I got into because I love to cook, really, and the idea of being a professional chef, professional cook, was very intriguing because the process of cooking and making people happy through food was why I did it. I didn't, you know, there was no TV Food Network. I mean, the biggest food star of the time was probably Jeff Smith.
Yeah. And Andrew, could you hold that thought for a minute while we take a break, and then I'll meet you on the other side?
Absolutely.
Thanks. Well, we'll take a break now.
Mommy, for my birthday, I want a princess party.
Give your little girl a party she'll remember forever from Sweet Pea Parties.
Mommy, this is wonderful.
Sweet Pea Parties will send out beautiful handmade invitations and then bring decorations, princess gowns to dress up in, fabulous favorite bags, real linen and china, fun games, even a real princess to transform your home into your child's fantasy wonderland.
Do they do parties for boys, too?
You bet they do. Safari adventures, pirates and dinosaur themes for the boys, princess, diva, and spa parties for the girls.
Yay! Woohoo!
Our hostesses make your party effort-free. They'll even send out thank you notes featuring each child's personal photo from the party. See for yourself at www.sweet-p-parties.com or call them 412-805-9623. Sweet Pea Parties, 412-805-9623.
Mommy, this was the best party ever.
Furnace working okay? How's your heating bills? You know, no kidding, an old or inefficient furnace can really add to the cost of keeping your home warm. If you want to keep costs down, get your furnace looked at, and I recommend Bolster to Heart Heating and Air Conditioning for that. The technicians at Bolster to Heart have been performing routine maintenance and installing high-efficiency heating and air conditioning systems in Pittsburgh since 1977. They're EPA-certified professionals who are continually factory-trained in all the latest installation and service techniques. They offer free estimates and don't even charge extra for Saturday service. They're a quality dealer you can trust. Stay warm this winter at the lowest possible cost. Call Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning at 412-367-3900. Maintenance or installation, Bolster DeHart Heating and Air Conditioning, 412-367-3900.
Influenza is a serious disease.
Are you talking to me?
If you have asthma, diabetes, or other chronic medical conditions, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you're 50 or older, yes. If your child is between 6 and 23 months, yes.
Are you talking to me?
If you live or work with those at high risk, yes. Influenza will kill as many as 36,000 people this year. It's that serious. Prevent influenza. Get immunized. A message from the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases.
We're back. We're still talking to Andrew Carmelini of Voce. And we now have a new...
Yeah, we have a new friend on the line.
Yes, Lee Schrager, who is the founder and executive director of the South Beach Wine and Food Festival.
Good afternoon, Lee, or good morning, or whatever time of day it is.
It's middle of the afternoon in Florida. Good afternoon, everyone.
We got lost here, but I'm glad I'm glad you're able to join us.
You know, Lee, Andrew was just, we've been talking to him, and he's just been finishing up a discussion of how things have changed since he became a chef. He came to be a chef because he wanted to cook. And I just was mentioning now that's sort of impossible with all the, all the other things chefs are required to do. Hello? That was not a good introduction.
Andrew, you still there, Andrew?
First of all, hello to Andrew, who, you know, I'm such a great fan of Andrew and his restaurant, you know, certainly here at Avoce in his past life, and we're thrilled that Andrew's going to be with us in South Beach this year.
Yeah, we're going to have a good time down there.
We are
looking forward to it.
Have you been before, Andrew, or is this your first time?
Very familiar with Miami. My first time down to the festival, yeah.
Oh, great. That's our first time down to the festival, too.
Yeah, so we look forward to seeing. So did you want to just sort of wrap up your last thought that you were talking about before the break, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, because I was saying that the biggest food celebrity when I was growing up was probably Jeff Smith. And
oh, yeah, that was funny.
And Julia Child. And, you know, it's possible now to get into and become kind of like a food celebrity before you're a chef, really, depending on, you know, what the market is and who you are. You know, but I think it's a good thing because people are excited about restaurants and excited about chefs and who's doing the cooking. You know, I think it's a good, because that's why you go. You go for the food, and it's, you know, you want to know who the chef is and what he's done. And you know, if you have a restaurant in Miami and you have a restaurant in New York, and you can experience it, but you don't have to come to New York to get it. And it's interesting to see what's happening with chefs that are kind of like, you know, branding themselves and being able to have restaurants in different cities. You know, so you don't have to go to come to New York to experience. You can even have one in your own hometown.
Right.
Kind of interesting.
Do you have a book yet, Andrew?
My book is it's in the works.
Okay.
I'm expecting probably at end of 2008.
Well, remind me because I may forget about it.
Well, they do take some time. I mean, the story that and how I learned to cook, I think, was probably I wrote it about a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
With Peter and Kimberly Witherspoon.
Now, there's one thing we wanted to do with Andrew before we let him go. You remember, I need a contact with Marlon in London.
Oh, absolutely. We can do that through. We can do that afterwards
on our website.
Yeah,
you can just email me, or you can give us your email. I can do it through your website if it's still not. I mean, is it going to be under construction for a while?
No, just a
all right.
Couple
well, then we'll be in touch.
Okay,
Andrew, thank you for coming on.
Great, thanks for having me.
And I look forward to meeting you in person at your restaurant and in South Beach.
Great.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're no longer stuck in the elevator. Bye-bye. Lee?
Yes?
Give us the background. How did you come to... You don't sound like you're from Florida.
I'm actually not. I'm actually born and raised in New York City and on Long Island.
Right.
And I moved to
How
Florida
did I know
when
that?
When I was about 17.
Uh-huh. You still have an accent.
Still have an accent. I guess I'm always... back and forth in New York, so there's always a little New York inside of me.
I see. Now, you were the founder of this. Could you give us the history of it? When did it happen, and how and why? And
07 will be the sixth year of the South Beach Wine and Food Festival, and it really happened because what I call my daytime job as director of special events and media relations for Southern Wine and Spirits. When I joined the company back in 2000, I actually started January 3rd of 2000, one of the tasks that I was assigned was to create awareness for the new school of the School of Beverage Management at Florida International University that Southern Wine and Spirits had built. Actually, it's now named the Southern Wine and Spirits Beverage Management Center.
Oh.
And my task was to create awareness, and I figured, oh, let's create a way to bring people down to see it, and hence that's how we started the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. It was really created to raise awareness for the school, and of course, you know, the rest is history. Going into our sixth year, we'll attract over 30,000 people, and we've had probably the greatest names in the food world coming to South Beach last weekend of February.
Yeah, we had Mark Militello and Alan Susser, who are both graduates, I guess, of Florida International University on the program. Was it a couple of weeks ago?
I think so.
And they said that their commitment to the program was because they were graduates of FIU, and there were you at Southern Wines and Spirits helping them out.
Well, you know what? Alan and Mark are two of South Florida's greatest chefs, or probably two of the greatest chefs in the country, and we're just fortunate to count them as graduates of the university, and, you know, fortunate that they've been such staunch supporters of the festival since year one.
Now, how do you get all these guys to come down? We've interviewed three or four people, and they all say they're coming for the first time, so you just keep on adding to the roster.
It's in Florida,
well,
it's warm.
You know, we bring back our favorites, and, you know, we have a wonderful title sponsor. The Food Network is our title sponsor, and Food and Wine Magazine is our presenting sponsor. So, you know, we've been very fortunate, and we've had great partners. We've been very successful in rounding up the greatest talent, not only in the country, but in the world. Last year, we honored Ferran Adria, which was an amazing coup for us. And as you may already know, we're honoring Eric Rapaire and Martha Stewart this year. So
right. We
really have something for everyone in South Beach.
I was a little confused. The Aspen, the Food and Wine Aspen Classic, right?
Exactly.
They opened, I thought they started a few years ago, a second one in Florida. Is that what this one is?
Well, the Food and Wine Classic is 25 years old. It'll be 25 years old
in
June of 07.
I mean, the one in Florida, that Food and Wine, I viewed it as a Florida extension or addition to the classic.
No, not at all. Actually, we started the event without Food and Wine Magazine, and then they became our presenting sponsor in year two of the festival. They're wonderful partners, and we obviously collaborate wonderfully on this. But the Classic is an event that they put on and produce solely for themselves. And the festival is something that we produce and have Food and Wine Magazine as our presenting sponsor and Food Network as our title sponsor.
Now, could you run through some of the activities and what goes on at this festival?
Sure. I mean, as I said, we really have something for everyone. We start off the weekend on Thursday night. We're doing a Burger Bash. It's actually called the Amstel Light Burger Bash, sponsored by, the Amstel Light Burger Bash, and Rachel Ray is hosting that. And that's a first-time event for us, and because Americans love burgers, and actually the entire world loves burgers, and I've wanted to do a Burger Bash for years, and we're kind of launching this because Rachel's been such a great supporter and friend of the festival, and she loves burgers, and we rounded up 15 or 20 of the greatest burger chefs in the country who are going to come down on that Thursday and prepare their burgers outdoors at the Ritz-Carlton Miami Beach.
That's fabulous.
That's Thursday night. We're also that same evening having a Bouvre Clicquot Champagne Bubble Bath, which is an amazing party that Champagne Bouvre Clicquot is sponsoring for the second year. We have our signature event, which is called the Moët & Chandon Bubble Q, which is two city blocks right on the beach behind the Delano Hotel that Al Roker is hosting with some of the greatest barbecue and Bubba Masters in the country, including people like Chris Lilly and Kenny Callahan. Laurent Tornadel from BLP is doing a station this year. We have about 17 or 18 chefs doing barbecue, traditional barbecue, all paired with different marks of Moët & Chandon. And that's an amazing event. It's probably the event that is most popular and gets the most attention and that sells out the quickest. And that's Friday night. We are also doing an event that same evening sponsored by the Wine Spectator that we call the Best of the Best, where we serve about 50 or 60 wines. We feature these wines. All of them had to have received a 92 or above by the Spectator. So you're sampling some of the greatest wines in the world. We have everything from a Chateau Etchem to Cheval Blanc to Chateau Margaux and Antinori and Farniente and Etchem. You name it. We have really some of the greatest wines, 50 or 60 of them, paired with 50 of the greatest chefs in the country. People like Tom Valente and Andrew Carmelidi and Daniel Boulou and Nobu and Gabriella Hamilton and Todd English. So it's an amazing lineup and pairing of wine and food at the best of the best.
Yeah, that's the event we're going to, I think.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I have to say, we really created that event as an overflow for the Bubble Cube because we sold so many tickets, we had to create something. And we created this event, the best of the best, that now has become so popular, we'll sell out of that this year as well.
That's great.
And as I mentioned, we're doing a tribute dinner on Saturday evening
to Eric.
Where we will honor Eric Repair and Maggie Lacoste from La Bernardin in New York City at a dinner that will be prepared by Tony Esdalt from Ducasse in New York City and Daniel Ballou, Elena Arzak from Spain, Mark Earl.
Oh, Elena's going to be here, huh?
Elena's going to be here this year. And as I said, we had Ferran last
year. Right.
So we have we've been very fortunate to have some of the greatest chefs, including, Pierre Hermet. We had Gordon Ramsay 3 years ago. We've just been so fortunate in the talent that we've been able to attract and have down in South Beach each year.
How does anybody, now you're sold out for this, for the Eric Repairs tribute, right?
I don't know. The Repair tribute dinner had a few tickets left last week. If we're not sold out, we will be by the end of the month.
Okay.
The Bubble Queue is sold out. A lot of the kids' kitchen seminars are sold out. Our big major event, our Grand Tasting Village, is sold out both on Saturday and Sunday.
Holy moly.
Some of our wine seminars. We went on sale October 19th, and we've already sold more to date than we sold in entirety last year. So, obviously, there's a huge, huge awareness of the wine and food worlds, and people just, clamoring to get tickets for the event.
How do you get tickets? Why don't we do that while we're thinking of it?
Well, the probably the best way to get tickets is to go to the website, and that website address is Sobe, which is, I'll spell it out, S-O-B-E, wine, W-I-N-E, food, F-O-O-D, fest, F-E-S-T.com. So it's Sobe, wine, and foodfest.com.
There's actually,
Lee,
I hate to interrupt, but there's actually an easier way if people go to www.onthemenuradio.com.
Much easier, much simpler, and probably quicker.
Go to the link is directly there. There's an update which talks about the festival. So if you click read more under the update, the website's right there. You just click straight through.
That is an easier way, and you don't have to spell out that long Sobe one.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I couldn't agree more.
Now, how does anybody get through all of this is what I'm beginning to wonder. It's so enormous.
I don't know if anyone could go to everything. I mean, I've never been to everything in 1 year. I certainly have tried, and try as I might, I just don't get through everything. So I think what you do is just got to, pick and choose what you like best or what you've not done before. I know this year I'm going to go to the best of the best because I've not been to it for the past 2 years. I've not even been to it since we started it because I paid, attention to the Bubble Queue while other of our committee has taken care of that. And this year we're going to switch because I can't wait to taste, these amazing champagnes like Cristal and Dom Perignon and Laurent Perrier and, some of this amazing food. So I'm going to switch off from amazing barbecue to amazing great wines and foods from all over the world.
Right. And I guess everybody could find out what it all costs and figure that out when they get there. And,
yeah, all that information is
right
in
the website.
It's right in the website. If you need to get, if you like reading things, you can print it off the website, which is exactly what I did when we were starting to think about whether or not we should be there. We're going to be there with bells on, listeners, and we hope you are too. Now, we did hear one thing from your friend Lisa. She said the after parties are kind of wild. Can you tell us some more about that?
I have not seen the wildness because I tend to go to them and go home and go to bed so I can be up early. But I've heard some great wild stories about it. And it's everything that the chefs and our personalities and our winemakers all expect of South Beach. And from what I understand, we don't let them down.
There you go. So every night, listeners, in addition to all the other events mentioned, there is a party.
Right. As Emerald said, it's spring break for chefs, and these chefs take great advantage of the amazing weather, the great company that they're in, and the wonderful sponsors down here.
You see, that's what I was thinking when Peter was asking how you managed to get all these people. The whole idea that it's freezing here in February and beautiful in Florida, and also this camaraderie of the chefs really enjoy.
Well, chefs party hearty at all times. I think you've probably observed.
It's a great time of year. It's a great time of year. South Beach and Miami Beach is the greatest, some of America's most beautiful Riviera. So it's not a hard ask, going into our sixth year. Not that we take anything for granted, but it certainly has gotten easier to get some of this talent down here.
Great. Well, we're going to go to a break right now. So stay with us, Lee.
What is it about food that evokes such warmth and excitement this time of year? Whether it's a simple homemade cookie or an elaborate turkey dinner, the warmth of food comes from sharing it. Sharing Food is at the heart of Table magazine. Table is the first and only publication for Pittsburgh and southwestern Pennsylvania that celebrates food for our region. Read about local farms, fresh produce, new recipes, old recipes, great chefs, and inspiring regional road trips with tasty destinations. The holiday issue of Table is available online now, and subscriptions are the perfect gift. At www.tablemagazine.com, you can order Table for One for $14.95, Table for Two for $24.95, or make it a party with Table for Four for only $39.95. That's four subscriptions for only $10 each for the whole year. Talk about a gift of food that won't go bad. So if you're craving the perfect way to feed the imagination of friends or family who are ready to devour all the best our region has to offer, subscribe today at www.tablemagazine.com.
T1 Internet access wasn't affordable to many companies as little as 2 years ago. Service providers were charging in the thousands of dollars, keeping the benefits of a T1 connection out of most companies' reach. ASP Station is now offering the faster and more reliable T1 service at a price significantly less than 2 years ago. The speed of a T1 for both sending and receiving data is simply amazing and will change the way your business runs indefinitely. You'll wonder how you ever lived without it. Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go fast.
Call ASP Station now for details. 412-661-6001. That's 412-661-6001. Log on aspstation.net for more information. ASP Station, it's the way to go, fast.
Hi, everyone. This is Tom Rita, the networking guy and host of Pittsburgh's most unique business show, Business in the Fast Lane. We're on every Saturday morning from 12 noon to 1 p.m. right here on The Edge, 1550 a.m. For the past 24 months, we've been bringing the best and the brightest into our studios to offer you ideas, advice, and real-world examples to help you grow your business. So save those honeydews for the afternoon and join me, Tom Rita, every Saturday morning from 12 to 1 on The Edge for Business in the Fast Lane, Pittsburgh's best kept secret.
You are listening to The Edge, AM 1550, WURP, Braddock, Pittsburgh.
Welcome back. It's a little frenetic here today.
It is, isn't it? We seem to be doing that. So, Lee, I think you have to leave us pretty soon.
I do have to leave you, but I am looking forward to seeing you in South Beach. I understand you're going to be down this year.
Absolutely,
yes,
we are.
First time.
And looking forward to it very much. Again, listeners, for Lee's benefit and for your benefit, www.onthemenuradio.com. Go to update on the right-hand side, click read more. You'll find a piece about the festival and a link directly to the website right there. You can get the entire program. You can pick the events that you want. All the pricing information's on there as well. We'll see you there. Be there or be square or something like that.
We look forward to seeing you. And please tell Tom Colicchio I send a big hi, and we're looking forward to welcoming him back to the festival. He's actually going to be at our BBQ event this year again. So
wonderful.
Tell Tom hello, and I'll see you in South Beach in a few weeks.
Great.
Fine, and Tom Colicchio is on the other line right now.
Yeah, do you want to say hello to him? Hello, Tom.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. Lee Schrager's just signing off. Do you want to say goodbye?
Hey, Lee,
Tom,
how you doing?
Hello?
Hello? Oh, there we go.
Hey, Tom, it's hello? Lee Schrager. I'm just signing off. I wanted to say hello.
Hey, Lee, how you doing?
Good. Look forward to seeing you in a few weeks in South Beach.
All right. Happy holidays.
Thanks. Same to you. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, Lee. Well, welcome, Tom.
Yeah, welcome
it's
to
been
welcome
quite a
to,
ride, this program.
Welcome to the madness of a live radio program going berserk.
<Yeah. laughs>
Tom, your name is so well known, but if somebody's for the people listening who have been living in a cave for the last 10 years, could you just give us a little background as to how you arrived where you are?
I'm in New York City right now. I live here in New York, and I have three restaurants here: Craft Bar, and Craft Steak. And you're probably seeing a pattern.
Yes.
And we also have Craft in Dallas and Craft Steak in Las Vegas, and soon to open will be Craft in Los Angeles in May.
Wow, that's a lot. And Witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. And Witchcraft, yes. We also have a small little group of sandwich restaurants called Witchcraft.
I just love it. Where have you been?
Where have I been? Well, I opened Gramercy Tavern about 12 years ago with Danny Meyer.
Right.
Prior to that, I was at a restaurant called Mondrian, and I did a few stints with chefs like Thomas Keller and Alfred Portal, and I spent some time over in France working. So I've kind of been doing this for about 25, 30 years now.
Yeah, well, that's wow.
I'm an old hand at this.
Yeah. So, but all your craft places have been really a big hit, huh?
So far, yeah, everything's been going really well on the craft front.
Could you explain the concept?
The title or the name of the restaurant comes from sort of my ideas that food and cooking, it's more about craftsmanship, less about artistry. You know, I really think that to be a great chef, you have to start off as a great cook, and so that's what we really focus on: just finding the best artisanal ingredients from small local farmers, and do just enough to the ingredients to sort of make them sing, but not to sort of overcomplicate them. And everything is served sort of family style on the table. One thing I always thought missing from the New York dining scene, because most New Yorkers eat out, is the idea of sharing food and passing food around the table. So that's why I wanted to serve food family style. And we'd started about 5 years ago, and it was a huge success, and it spawned many imitators around the country. It's been a great ride. And I think also, there's a lot of food out there that's sort of turning very, what they call this whole movement of molecular gastronomy, food is sort of fussed with and chemicals added to it to create certain effects that kind of leave the diner with, wow, how did they do that? But, I think that, and that's great. I think there's a place for that in the culinary world. But, my sensibilities really come, they're rooted in the earth, and that's kind of, how I like to cook and food that's very earthy and sort of has a connection to the ground. So, yeah.
Right. No, but what
about craft?
Yeah, but what about also how they get to choose what they get to go with what?
Well, it's an a la carte menu. So if you order a piece of fish, there's a whole roster of vegetables or potatoes or grains or mushrooms and things that you can choose. But again, the one misconception about craft is that you're going to choose a bunch of ingredients and they're going to end up on a plate. That's not what happens. Uh-huh. Everything is very similar to a steakhouse where, if you order your steak and then you order your cream spinach and your, baked potato, except that there's a lot more to choose from.
I see. We used to have a flatbread restaurant here that had so many choices and so many categories. I was always totally dismayed not being able to put together a decent piece of pizza.
For me, I think a very simple way of sort of understanding what goes together. And my feeling is if it grows together, it goes together.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning that vegetables that come out of the ground at the same time have a natural affinity for each other.
Right.
And so that's kind of how I cook. I usually look at the season and what's coming up and almost kind of list all the proteins I want to work with and all the starches, all the vegetables I want to work with and mushrooms and herbs and stuff. And then just kind of start mixing and matching. And what cooking, I think, really is about, it's not so much about the combinations of food, but it's how each ingredient is approached and how as a chef, it's your kind of role to sort of understand how the best way, what is the best way to approach each ingredient. For instance, if you want to put together lamb with roasted tomatoes, eggplant, and say, red peppers, how can you do that? Mm-hmm. Do you braise the lamb? Do you roast the lamb? Well, that usually depends on the cut of meat. If it's a shoulder, you want to braise it. If it's a rack, you may want to roast it. If it's chopped, you may want to grill it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a tomato, do you want to roast it whole? Do you want to cut it into petals? If you have eggplant and peppers, do you want to turn the whole thing into a ratatouille? So there's a lot of different questions that you have to answer, but really it's up to the individual person to make those decisions. And to me, that's why recipes are fine as a starting off point, but really I think the way that I try to teach people to cook is by using the ingredients and just cooking whatever you feel like cooking, what makes sense to you.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of how I like to approach food, and that's how we approach the craft.
Now, is it some assembly required? I'm still a little bit confused, Tom. When the food comes out to the table, family style, is it one ingredient in a dish, or
usually it's one ingredient, or maybe if it's a fish, if it's braised in a little court bouillon, it may have some aromatic vegetables or some herbs and stuff in there. But yes, but basically it's about the single ingredient.
Okay,
and then it's you sort of eat whatever you feel like eating. It's not about making the perfect dish. Mm-hmm. It's about enjoying a lot of different things and a lot of different flavors. And sometimes people have fun kind of mixing and matching. They'll taste something and go, wow, I've never had a Jerusalem artichoke with a scallop before. This is really good. but that's up to the individual diner to sort of make that
okay, good.
That then discovery.
So some assembly required is a good description of it.
Yeah, I guess so. Some assembly required, sure.
Yeah, we just were at Mrs. West's, what's her name, Mrs.
Wilkes Boarding House.
Yeah, Mrs. Wilkes Boarding House in Savannah.
And they put 25 bowls of different stuff
on the table.
None of it very good, I might add.
Well, that's okay. Hopefully we leave something on the table that are good.
No, I mean, people love it. It's that real old down-home southern stuff, with the black-eyed peas.
What's interesting at Kraft is people have figured out how to use the restaurant, and we have some people that come in, twice a week, three times a week, and they'll sit down, just have a piece of fish and, a vegetable and some mushrooms, and that's it. Yeah, and then you have other people that come in and they'll order, the entire menu and try to eat through it. And so it's really, people have figured out how to use the restaurant a lot of different ways.
In Kraft Steak, you're just simply specializing in a more...
Same concept, we just focus more on meat, exactly. Right.
Now, you don't do that... You don't do that silly thing like Morton's, do you, and bring around the meat wrapped up in Saran wrap and show it to people?
No.
thank goodness for that.
No. The only time we may bring something out is if we just started getting the Japanese Wagyu or the Kobe, the real Japanese Kobe beef, and it's really amazing. If you're a beef lover, it's amazing to see it because of the marbling, and obviously when it's cooked, you don't see that, but. So occasionally, but we don't wrap it in plastic and bring it out. Like that. It's kind of wrapped in a nice towel and presented. Kraft Steak is same concept, focus more on meat, and same thing. We're buying all of our beef from small family farms, all naturally raised, no antibiotics, no hormones, which I think is becoming more and more important.
Oh, I think that's
sort of
it. Yeah,
understanding where your food comes from.
Oh, well, how many more outbreaks do we need, before we get the picture?
Exactly, and that's my point. We know the people that we buy from; they know where the animal. They raise the animals themselves, so we know where the animal is all the time, what it's being fed. And it's unfortunate that the public doesn't quite understand about E. coli and things like that. If you go out and buy a steak. It's never a problem with E. coli. E. coli is a surface bacteria, and so usually this problem with hamburgers because if it's a surface bacteria, it gets ground in, and then if it's not cooked properly, you get sick. Where if it's a steak and it's cooked on the outside, you're fine.
Right.
Also we know where beef comes from. It's something that's very, very important to us. I think it's going to become more important, especially if there's an outbreak of mad cow in this country.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Peter's from England, and his mother never stopped ordering her meat. But she knew the person, the farm, the person raising it. So she never had any qualms about it.
Mad cow, it doesn't really develop in the animal until it's over 3 years old. And in this country, most of our meat is consumed at about 18 months.
Uh-huh.
So it's never really an issue. But except for ground beef and cheaper beef. Because what happens is we don't eat cows in this country. We eat steers. It's a castrated steer. They're usually fed grass. In a pasture until they're about a year or 13 months, then they're switched over to corn. And they eat corn for about, another 6 to 8 weeks, and then put on about a third of their weight. Absolutely no problem. Now, if you take a cow, a dairy cow, and after a dairy cow starts giving off milk, they slaughter it and they use it for cheap ground beef. That animal is usually 3, 4, 5, 6 years old.
So
that's where you can have the issue with mad cow. It'll never happen with sort of, premium grade steak, because again,
it's so hard getting premium grass fed organic local because you've got to buy the whole steer.
we actually specialize in organic grass fed beef. We are buying all of our grass fed beef out of Hawaii.
Yeah, but I mean, how do I get it? Or any other
home club?
Well,
you have to come to my restaurant. That's how you get it. I'm not sure. I think if you go online, you may be able to order just steaks. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. You know, I've heard that same issue before, where if you want grass-fed, you have to buy half the animal or something and, you know, then freeze it.
Hey, Tom, could you hang on for a minute so we take a break? And then we'll come back and we'll talk again.
Sure, of course.
Okay, we'll take a break now.
The Internet is crucial to your business. Everybody knows this, but did you know Nidhogg is the company you should call for Internet service? Nidhogg, personal web page hosting for less. Business web page hosting, Nidhogg offers both Unix and NT server support. Nidhogg is the company you should call for dedicated Internet access. Nidhogg offers DSL for high speed, low cost, always on access. DSL is great. It means no more dial-up. Oh, by the way, do you remember that thing called the telephone? Do you remember when people used phone lines to access the internet? Oh, I'm sorry, you still use dial-up? Well, Nidhogg does that too. Local access telephone numbers? Okay, I don't understand it all either, but I do know that I need it, and I know where to get it. Nidhogg, Nidhogg.com, 412-661-5917. That's 661-5917, or log on, Nidhogg.com. Internet the Nidhogg way.
Hi, friends. I'm Phil Marcus, the host of Real Estate 101, heard every Saturday here on The Edge, AM 1550. If you've been thinking about selling your house or buying a house, I'd like to speak with you. Choosing the right agent is one of the first and most important steps in the process of buying or selling real estate. It's critical that you choose an agent who has the knowledge and experience to not only find that perfect new home for you, but to also be able to guide you step by step through the often complicated real estate process. If you don't already have a realtor, may I offer my services? I've been a real estate agent in Pittsburgh for almost 30 years. I'm a life member of the Realtors Association, and I'm proud to say that I've earned both the GRI and the coveted CRS professional designations. Won't you call me at RE/MAX Heritage? The phone number is 412-241-4200, extension 154, or my email address is phil@philmarcus.com. That's 412-241-4200, extension 154, or phil@philmarcus.com. Let's talk.
Have you been jazzing around yet? It's Sundays from 10 to 12 here on 1550. Get a taste of the latest jazz albums, a concert and club calendar, birthdays, awards, obituaries, and more. Plus featured artist interviews. That's a lot of jazzing. Check it out for yourself. Sponsored in part by Martini's Route 885 Jefferson, original recipe Italian cooking, and Spider Mondanelli's Pittsburgh Jazz Giants, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Jazzing around. Sundays, 10 to 12 here on 1550 The Edge.
Jazzin' Around with David J. is next on The Edge, AM 1550.
Welcome back. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and our online guest is Tom Colicchio, who is...
And let's not forget, because we sometimes do forget this, you can communicate with us by email, giving your views about the program or asking us any questions at www.onthemenuradio.com.
Yes, and as I was saying, we're talking to the chef, Tom. You were telling us about your prized beef, the Wagyu beef, right?
Uh-huh.
I had one more question before that, before we move on, then tell us about the wine and food and wine festival, and also about your program. Somebody who's a food writer who does studies ingredients, I'm trying to think who it was, said that he checked out Wagyu beef, and that the only difference between that and regular beef was noticeable in the lesser cuts rather than in the prime cuts. Now, is that true?
Absolutely not true.
Okay.
First off, there's a very big difference between Wagyu and, say, Hereford or Angus. It's a different kind of cattle.
Right.
Okay, number one. The cattle in Japan, it's 100% genetics of Wagyu. Wagyu has a propensity to put on weight and put on fat and has a frame big enough to carry it. So as I said before, when the animal is raised on grass for about 12, 13 months and switched over to corn, they feed the Wagyu corn for a year, sometimes 2 years.
I see.
Okay? So the big difference is, again, when you feed, as I mentioned earlier, when the animal goes, American cattle, when it goes on corn, it puts on a third of its weight in a very short time, 2 months, 3 months. Okay? So if you imagine if you fed an animal corn for 2 years, it just puts on an amazing amount of fat. And it is noticeable everywhere. Now, in this country, the American Wagyu, the genetics are 50% Wagyu, 50% Angus. So it doesn't put on hold as much fat, but it's still far better than our regular cattle that we have here, Hereford.
Which are you supplying? You're supplying fully imported Kobe?
We do all three, and there's a third one. There's Australian, which is about 75% Wagyu, 25% Angus.
Oh, there you go.
We have the Japanese, the Australian, and the American Kobe, or the American Wagyu.
Well, we're talking to a restaurateur who used to have a butcher shop in Texas someplace, and he said that they would raise the Wagyu, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they would breed them. But that the Wagyu were bad mothers, so they would then transfer the fetus into the Hereford or
Angus?
Angus.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the genetic pool crossbreed them, but I think they're actually crossbred. I haven't heard that they do that. If they had to do that for every,
I couldn't imagine it would be so labor intensive.
No,
right?
that doesn't make sense unless. That's how they actually created the genetic line.
I'm not sure
how that happened, but I can definitely study more, but I haven't heard that at all. And there's also differences. There's several different Wagyu farms. There's we use Snake River Farms and Mishima Farms. Mishima's in California. Snake River's in Idaho. We found that those are the best two. Huh.
I had another beef-related question since we're on the subject, and before we let it go, we've had this wonderful beef in Tuscany called from the Val di Chiana.
The Chianina.
Which is used to make this wonderful dish, bistecca fiorentina. Now, is that how different is that?
It's a different cattle, very very big structured cattle, leaner because it usually eats grass only, really full flavor. In fact,
great flavor.
Cesare, there's a chef, I can't remember his last name. Anyway, there's a restaurant here where he actually raises the cattle, but again, it's a Chianina and I think Angus blend, and he's raising it himself. He has a Tuscan restaurant, hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. It's very good, just very different, but it's similar, it's more similar in texture and flavor to grass-fed.
I just thought it was wonderful when we had it in
Cortona. We had a wonderful restaurant in Cortona.
Called Scala.
It was called Osteria del Teatro.
Oh, that's it, Osteria del Teatro.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, you were going to tell us about your hit TV show.
I'm a sort of host and judge on a show called Top Chef. It is on Bravo. It's a reality contest show. It starts off with 15 chefs, and every episode there's a quick fire challenge and a long challenge and our elimination challenge. And so every week there's lots of great cooking and lots of great drama, but every week someone goes, and the winner receives $100,000 in a big spread in Food & Wine magazine. So it's
$100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to open a restaurant or something?
So it's a little bit like... It's a little bit like Dancing with the Stars.
No.
I guess so.
In the kitchen.
They can use their money however they want. They don't have to open a restaurant. But the winner from the first season, he is using some of that money to open a restaurant, but also just to kind of live off of until that restaurant opens up.
Well, now, are you finding a lot of talent? I mean, I was amazed, this American Idol stuff, the amount of musical talent that's out there. But are you finding that this translates into cooking talent?
Well, I think so. I think the big difference, when I look at American Idol, a lot of those people are pretty good singers.
None
of them are writing their own songs. And that's what takes talent. I mean, you're a songwriter, and you're a musician, and you can sing, then you're really talented. If you're writing your own music, that's where it's really at, if you ask me. But these chefs are creating their own dishes and their own style of cooking. I think they're very talented, yeah.
Well, it's apparently a big hit, and I've seen clips from it on the Today Show, right?
Yes. We're on NBC. Bravo is an NBC affiliate, so yeah. So you'll see it on the Today Show, sure.
Well, now, when tell our listeners when it is.
We are on Wednesday night at 10 o'clock, but if you're a fan of Bravo, they repeat it several times during the course of the week, and they also periodically have marathons, but you can catch up on the entire season in one day. You just have to dedicate a few hours to it.
Huh. Tom, what about... You have a website, obviously, huh?
Craftrestaurant.com. It's craftrestaurant.com.
Okay. Okay, mm-hmm. So they can, and listeners can get all the information needed.
All the craft information, yeah. Once you come into that, you can go into the craft steak or witchcraft or craft bar, bios and all that great stuff. Yeah, it's all.
I wish you would package and sell this beef, you know, so we could cook it at home. We can't use up a whole cow.
No, I know. You know, I think if you start searching for it, you may be able to find packaged steaks that are grass-fed. I don't know, but I'm sure.
We have a lot of southwestern Pennsylvania. Around. We have tons of independent small farmers. But, it takes so long to produce one of these beasts. You know, so they really would go for somebody who's going to buy, or else two people are going to share one, you know.
Right.
And you can buy maybe some ground beef and stuff like that, but you're not going to get a long loin, you know.
Right. Now, this show's in Pittsburgh, is that correct?
Yeah, well, it's on the internet, so it's global, but we're based in Pittsburgh.
Okay. We're buying lamb from a farmer outside of Pittsburgh. His name is Keith Martin.
I love it, that's Keith.
Lamb. Oh, yeah, we know
I
Keith.
I knew Keith. I've been buying his lamb.
Great stuff,
Yeah, it's been years before he was even the...
It's been more than 25 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it was before he supplied Per Se and French Laundry and,
he makes,
and all those places.
He makes house calls.
Yes.
Yeah, I love Keith.
We buy some lamb from him.
And then, also have Jamison's, which is another great.
Yeah, I know. I use them as well.
So, I mean, it's a great area. I mean, a lot of chefs say that they like working here because they have access to so many good local products.
Sure.
Now, we wanted to mention you're also in this book, which we're plugging, How I Learned to Cook.
Oh, yeah. How I Learned to Cook, sure.
Yeah, we talked to Andrew.
Pretty neat book.
Yeah. We had Andrew Carmelini on earlier.
Yeah, what was your story, Tom? What did you own up to?
I told a story about how I discovered what salt did. I was at my parents belonged to a swim club in the summer. We used to go there, and one day there were a bunch of steaks in a cooler, and I just kind of threw one on a grill. I was about 9-10 years old, and threw one on a grill and cooked it up, and this looks it's pretty good, but it seems to be missing something. And I took some salt and sprinkled it on the beef. And to me, it was just an absolute revelation. I couldn't believe the difference it made just by putting a little bit of salt on it. So then I took another steak out and salted it before I grilled it, and it was just amazing. And it was so good. I had a third, and I think I ended up eating through half the steaks in the cooler. And when I was finished, I got a little bit of a scolding from my dad, who was upset that I ate half the family steaks. Yeah.
Now you're from Elizabeth, New Jersey, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing we were to do here is you got to say hello in passing to Lee Schrager, and you're also going to be at the South Beach Food and Wine Festival.
What do
you enjoy about it the most?
Yeah, for me, what I enjoy about it the most is whenever we do these events and there's a bunch of, chefs coming down, 30, 40 chefs, it's just a great time for all the chefs to get together and spend time with each other. You know, we're so busy day in and day out. Even the guys who I work, down the block from in New York, I don't see that often. So, it's a chance for us to hang out and just relax, take it easy. It's a little bit of work. It's a lot of fun. Usually after the dinners that we do or whatever, there's the parties and stuff that
everybody
we go
talks
to and
about.
Hang out and that's what I like about it.
Everybody talks about the after parties. I'm not sure I'm going to be up for that.
The after parties are where it's at. Yeah, the after parties are really good.
Yeah, we may have to sleep. We may have to sleep in.
In the morning, you have to stay up that late, huh? But
You know what? See, we're seasoned. Chefs are used to staying up late and partying hard, and we get up early. We don't sleep much.
No, I'm familiar with that. There was an event the last couple of years at Nemacolin and Woodlands Resort. Just outside Pittsburgh, and chefs and winemakers come down in large quantities and gather in a cigar bar after everything else was over, and it's they have quite an amazing appetite for tobacco and beverages.
You put winemakers together and chefs together, and we kind of eat fancy food and we drink wine, but we really want our beer, cigars, and scotch.
that's it exactly.
Listen, we have about 2 minutes to wrap this up. We have 2 minutes to go, and there's so many more things I'd like to ask you, but let me let you say what you want to say about where you think we are with this whole food scene, and particularly, I think, with the young talent coming up.
Now, be careful, because the world is listening.
Okay. Okay. I'm just so excited to be doing what I'm doing. I absolutely love, this industry and love food. And, 30 years ago when I started cooking, my dad suggested I become a chef. There was no idea of ever being on TV or writing a book or going on the Today Show or anything like that. And so, I did it because I loved it. It's something I just had a passion for. And, I hope that the young cooks that are getting involved today are doing it for that reason.
That's